Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Well, in this best of, we go back to 2015. This will be an interesting time machine. Talk a little about Trump and his comments about Mexicans being rapists, and we get into some of the early Bill Cosby notions way back 5 years ago or so. First, let me tell you about Tommy John. Secret to staying sweat-free this summer, Tommy John's summer-ready, ultra-breathable underwear and bras as well. Cool cotton underwear for men and for women, like having your own AC unit built in on your body. Natural Pima cotton for enhanced airflow and evaporate sweat super fast. I told you, I go out, I take a walk, I hit my rowing machine, I work up a sweat, and I just wear them dry at my house. They dry on you. That's how breathable they are. Lounge pants, lazy day joggers, soft Zoom-ready tees and polos. Upgrade to Tommy John today with enhanced super breathable designs. This stuff is, it's really the best. You see a lot of these other guys trying to copy them now, but they were first, and they never stop innovative. Innovating, I should say. Best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee. Right, Gary?
That's right. For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get on. And thank you for joining us to yet another episode. Our second. Thank you. Episode of Reasonable Doubt. Mark Garagos over there. Me, Adam Carolla, over here. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for telling a friend. The genesis of this was... I love talking to Mark Garagos.
And I love talking to you, Adam, so it's a good combo. And hopefully somebody will listen.
Both of us, I would say, just interested. And the topics can go wherever the topics go. We talked about, in our last episode, wanting to get into Donald Trump and wanting to get into this Hugh Hefner thing. Hefner, I've not seen out and about in a while. So
right,
I'm
and
guessing...
he was in the news because one of his former people wrote a book, and she talked about him masturbating in the corner and using Quaaludes as thigh openers, and she went on the book tour. That was the book tour. Mm-hmm. Quaaludes as thigh openers and sex in the mansion.
Also, one of the things that was interesting about Hugh Hefner when I interviewed him once or twice is he said he'd had a couple of gay experiences, and it was like, wow, this guy's the grandfather of straight.
Right.
And he's like, but then in a weird way, when you have a round bed and there's, 28 tits and 4 cocks flying around. What? Something's going to end up in your mouth. You know what I mean?
It's a he's equal opportunity experimenter.
Yes, there's a certain point when I think you can have a couple of gay experiences and even be straighter than a straight guy just because you're into sex so voraciously.
You've rounded the bend.
That's right.
Yes.
So
pun intended.
Right. So. The Hefner thing, is there going to be a situation or the DA
thing,
looking at it?
The Hefner thing, they've looked at, no. But the Cosby at the Hefner mansion is actively being investigated.
Well, Cosby was a real fixture over there throughout the decades. Like, if you go back to the old school 70s Playboy, roller boogie parties and stuff on the tennis court.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can remember as a youth stealing Playboys from the family I was babysitting and whatever.
Yeah, I used to have to get them at the dentist's office.
And they would have – there's plenty of pictures of, like, Cosby. Of course, he's wearing tennis shorts and a sweater, but all the other chicks are wearing bikinis and they got their roller skates on and they're going around for the roller boogie party, and then God knows what happened that night.
Well, Quaaludes were very popular in L.A. in the 70s and 80s, more the late 70s.
Right. So Cosby and Gary, you can pull up a picture. It probably from inside a sort of summertime. Oh, you know what they used to have here? Here's what it used to be.
Was the Playboy Jazz Festival?
No. Well, that too. But they would have the Playmate Olympics.
Really? Well, you have a lot of knowledge on the Playboy kind of licensing affiliated deals.
While you were reading briefs and the life of Clarence Darrow and things like that.
You were studying Hugh Hefner's whole empire. And
that's right.
How it came from Chicago. And
That's right.
Right.
They used to do like the Playboy Olympics, and it'd be like, you know.
Was this at the mansion?
Yeah, at the mansion. And it was like, it was at a Chuck E. Cheese. It was at Van Nuys. Of course it was at the mansion.
All I know, the Playboy Olympics, they could have held it at the Coliseum. They could have sold tickets.
Well, they should have, because they'd have like the obstacle course. And
right.
Of course the chicks in the bikinis going up and over the thing and into the water, you know, the water bin and all that kind of stuff. But I think the Cos used to always kind of be there and be like the celebrity announcer and all that kind of stuff. And as a kid, it always felt like, it's kind of a joke. It's like, there's Bill Cosby, and everything's on the up and up, and he's there. He's probably got his wife there somewhere.
Right.
And he's doing the play-by-play with the Hefner and whoever. And but as it turns out, there were more going on after hours.
Apparently, if you believe the 48 women that are...
Are they up to 48
now?
Yeah,
they're up to 48.
What if you... If Bill Cosby calls you tomorrow and says, I want you to represent me,
I tell him, stay with Marty. He's got Marty Singer. Marty's a great lawyer. I admire him. The problem has been in this case, there's just been a lot of decisions that you can second guess. I
mean, and what would be your global strategy for Cosby right now if you...
I never would have let. I don't care what you had to do. You just never would have let that transcript that judge released out. I mean,
right.
That is just a disaster.
All right, so that's rearview mirror business.
Or exactly.
Now
going forward,
you're taking over tomorrow.
Yeah, going forward, got to make these things go away. You got to make them go away
with checks.
Yeah.
So it's basically...
I mean, he's 77 years old. What's he going to do with all the money? I mean, he's given a lot of it to Temple University and other places. But, I mean, he should have made these things, or maybe he didn't want to, or maybe he couldn't. So it's not to second-guess Marty, but you got to have made some of these things go away. Because part of the problem with this is, you've seen it, it's a snowball effect.
Right. So you sit down with Bill... And first you compliment him on his bathrobe that looks like the Partridge Family school bus. And then the next thing out of your mouth is, you know, good news and bad news. It turns out Temple and many other organizations don't want any of your money.
Money anymore.
That's the bad news. The good news is we've got a lot of cash freed up.
That can be distributed to 48 different law firms around the country. Actually, Gloria's got about 16 of them, I think. So
now, what is it? In your experience, when you go to, let's start with number 48, and you say, look, we don't want this to go to trial. This could be years. We'd like to give you some money. And she says, put your checkbook away. I'm interested in justice. How many of those folks are actually interested in justice, or what they're saying is put a couple more zeros behind whatever you're going to write
justice,
in your checkbook?
As I always say, and any judge will tell you who's a mediator, or any good mediator will tell you, if you want justice, the last place you're going to get it is in the halls of justice. I mean, it's all about money. That's what the civil justice system is. It's about money. I mean, hopefully you get corrective action and things like that. But at this point, he's 77. Other than the current LAPD investigation, I don't see jeopardy attaching or something like that. You got to get these people one by one and group by group.
And knock them off.
And knock them off.
What do you think the average price would be if you were just to guess per 48?
Well, most of these people are beyond the statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So they really have no case. If they want to litigate this, they're not going to get anywhere. So that's a problem. The only time you reinvigorate this is when he comes out and he or a rep calls them a liar, and then you get to get into a defamation suit where they sue him.
Right.
But, you know, would it be worth $50,000 to $100,000 a piece to pay off 25 or 28 of these? And is that a strategy that's been used in other cases a zillion times? Yes.
Is it merely $50,000 or $100,000?
Nuisance values, anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000 in something like this where you've got a crisis surrounding him, which is what he's got. I mean, he's got a global brand that's taken a beating. I can't think of a reversal of fortune of somebody to go from so beloved to so vilified so quickly.
Joe Paterno. But
except Joe was kind of in death or posthumously, he kind of has made a comeback.
Well, yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah. Which is great news for his ghost.
Right. and Penn State. Nittany Lion fans.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you know, not who's had – well, I mean, Joe had the respect as a coach, which is a sort of father figure, but – Bill was literally the nation's father.
Right.
You know, he's literally the father figure.
That's what that judge said. I mean, you know, when you take the mantle of the public scold and the paternalistic moralizer. The interesting thing about Cosby, though, is there is a great wellspring of support generally in the African-American community when there's an attack. And that has not happened in this case.
Right.
It has not happened at all. And I think I heard somebody saying last week that they thought it was the, you know, in America, the hypocrisy factor. When you say one thing, when you're lecturing, you know, young black men to pull their pants up, while at the same time, later you find out he's telling, you know, young women to pull their pants down. It's not a good look.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is a thing. It is strange, but we as human beings react to hypocrisy
much more violently almost than we do to anything else.
Right. If we find out that a preacher was talking about fire and brimstone for a man who lays down with another man, and then it turns out he had himself a little tryst at the airport, we go nuts
we
on
go
that guy.
Freaking crazy. But
versus,
I mean, look at Jared, the Subway spokesman, you know, it now looks like, I mean, where was are people completely out of their heads that they, you know, the head of his foundation is sitting in custody for child porn and they searched his house yesterday? And I mean, you know, that's generally the most vile accusation you can make about anybody. And the kind of the level of reprehensibility almost pales in comparison to Cosby and this kind of him breaking the hypocrisy.
Yeah, it is. It's weird because if you take the action, which is either moral or, you know, for instance, gay sex, who cares?
Right.
It's gay sex. The action itself. I'm gay. This is my partner. We've been together for 14 years. We run a candle shop on the West Side. Who cares? I can open it. Everyone's fine. Welcome to the party.
Right.
But now if you're the preacher who's preaching against homosexuality and then at some point gets caught with the gay prostitute, we go berserk on you. But it's weird because it's still just you sucking off another dude.
Right. I mean, Dennis Hastert is a perfect example. Guy used to be Speaker of the House, was there, I think, the longest running Republican Speaker of the House, voted against kind of every gay rights initiative, everything else. And then it turns out the guy goes out to become a lobbyist and he's withdrawing millions of dollars in cash, lying to the FBI about it, if you believe their indictment, all to cover up that he was fondling some guy when he was the coach. Actually, we don't even know that it's the guy, but somebody who was going to reveal that he was having a homosexual relationship 20 or 30 years ago.
You know,
it's stunning.
So hypocrisy, it's an interesting thing. I wonder if hypocrisy is as strong an emotion in other cultures. Like, I don't think shame is uniquely American.
But I don't think hypocrisy.
Because
I'm trying to think,
the thing about and look, who the fuck knows what's going on with hypocrisy in Greece and Africa and where Western Europe or the Balkan Islands. But the point is, it is this thing where it's a little counterintuitive. I mean, I get it. I get why people are outraged, but it's a little counterintuitive because we've agreed that homosexual relationships are fine with us.
Correct.
We've agreed that young black teenage males would stand a better chance if they pulled their pants up and tightened their belt a little bit and stayed in school and spoke a closer version to the Queen's English. Like, I do believe most sort of sensible people, the same people who would be all right with the homosexual encounters, would be all right with saying, yeah, I think it would probably help some of those kids over in Ferguson if you pulled your pants up and studied the Oxford Dictionary just a little bit. I mean, in terms of gainful employment, yeah, I think it would. And so we do agree with that, but then we fly right back to, here he is telling these guys how to live, and he's off
putting Quaaludes in the drinks, and it just drives people to, I mean, the...
But it's like, what if you had a wonderful architect, engineer architect, and you were a huge fan, and you loved the guy's work, and you admired his work, and he was building you a dream house, and at some point, he invited you and your wife over for brunch, and his house was a piece of shit. I mean, wouldn't you still be able to separate the two and go, well, he's doing a pretty nice job over at my place, and if he wants to live in this piece of shit with a horrible floor plan that he laid out... That'll be his business. I like what he's doing for me. I mean, it colors it a little bit, but do we need to fire him as an architect?
Clearly, as a society, we do. We just cannot tolerate hypocrisy. It just is impossible. I mean, it's virtually, can you name somebody who survived and been redeemed with that?
I will say that, you know, sometimes in death, like Joe Pa, and sometimes in a weird way, as sort of a Michael Jackson thing, because in a weird way, the Michael Jackson is in sort of the ultimate hypocrisy, which is I love all the world's children. You know what I mean? And well, maybe you do, you know, or at least you're trying one at a time. But either way, after death, for sure, there is this sort of thing where,
you become lionized after death. I mean, that happens.
And there is a build them up, break them down, build them up process. Unfortunately,
we love that in America.
Yeah, but the cause is a little old for the build up back again. And I'm not sure who's going to spearhead that movement. It's not going to be me.
I don't think you're going to find too many people at age 77 who are going to remake themselves.
Right. So. But it is interesting, and it's an interesting sociological question, which is hypocrisy is in a weird way neither here nor there. Like, you know, I will say to my kids, not quite yet, but they're getting to that age where I'll go, listen, I don't want to see you drinking. I don't want to see you smoking. I don't want to. And then at some point, daddy will be out with a drink and a cigarette out on the porch.
Exactly. Well, that was my grandfather put it best. Grandpa Jake used to say, just do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
He understood it.
And so, yes, I am a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm technically right in hoping for a future that is not my children drowning in a drunk in a dunk tank of Crevassier with nicotine floating, cigarette butts floating in it, right?
Like, or inhaling cigars.
Right. I hope that's what I would look forward to for my children. And yes, whether it's, you know, we do it with food. We do, you know, I tell the kids, you know, easy with the TV, and then I go in and watch 9 hours of SportsCenter.
What do you think? You think it's worse that, I mean, like, who's getting the... Because there's a first cousin of the hypocrisy thing, which is Trump, which I keep wanting to talk about.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about Trump.
Which is, here you've got the guy who comes out and says something about immigration. Now, mind you, the Republican base, I mean, and he shot up in the polls because that is a, you know, a serious issue. And then out of nowhere, you get this shooting on the pier in San Francisco, where it's a person who was deported five times, but San Francisco is a sanctuary city, did not turn this guy over. And next thing you know, this poor young girl, 32-year-old, is killed. And that happens within a week of Trump being publicly shamed and having all of the sponsors cancel him out and everything else.
Yeah, him hiring that illegal to put a bullet in that chick's head was the best $40,000 Trump ever spent. But no, it's first off, it's so sad because it's so sad the way we're wired, because somebody tweets me, they send me a clip of O'Reilly just sort of going off on Gavin Newsom and Clinton and the sanctuary and state and all that kind of stuff. And I want to talk about that stuff where the feds say, hey, this ain't going to happen. And the state goes, yeah, it is. And just how that works and how also it's a kind of a two-way street. Like sometimes they'll do it the other way where the feds will say, you know, no to gay marriage, and the city will go, yes to gay marriage. Or no to pot, and the city will go, yeah, the state will go, yes to pot.
Which is so amazing about this argument. I mean, from a political standpoint, you're talking about states' rights and municipalities' rights and get big government off my back, yet at the same time, when it's not a policy you endorse, then you want the federal government to come in. So,
There's a hypocrisy.
There's a hypocrisy there too.
But so the sad part, here's the very sad part. Not only have a dead young person, but Adam Carolla was on his computer some weeks ago looking at this thing, and at a certain point went, she was hot. Which is so sad that guys are wired that way, but the woman was very attractive.
But she was with her father, so that kind of damped that down.
Yeah, I didn't get that part. They just showed a picture.
I know, you saw the picture. I read the story, and once I saw it was with the father, and you and I both having daughters, you can empathize.
It's
unimaginable.
Now, what? All right, so.
So here's my question. Is he wrong when he comes out? Because everybody said, you know, when he made the first statement, what he said was, they're not sending their best people. They, meaning Mexico.
Yes. Oh, listen. Look, here's the deal. And I've said it many times. Cultures are cultures because that's the lion's share of their people. Whatever. If it's Mexican, Armenian, Hungarian, Canadian, whatever it is, French, whatever they adapt, whatever that is, it is. It is because of the people. That's the culture. And then whatever – I always say this whenever they're talking about whatever ethnic cleansing's going on in Darfur, whatever's going on in Mexico with the drug cartels and whatever, I get the people and they go to me all the time. They go, listen. It's not the people. The people are hardworking. They're family oriented. They're God fearing. It's the government.
Right. That's always the default position.
What part of Sweden do they get the government from? Because somebody's got to stop this. And I go, what is the nationality of the government? And I go, well, they're Mexican. And I go, all right, well, that factors in because this is part of an overall, there's sort of a cultural thing. Now, there are differences in cultures, and we then decide what we like in other cultures and what we don't like in other cultures.
Correct.
And some of it just comes down to like foie gras and stuff like that. Like, all right, do you want to go to France? You can get some stuffed goose liver, and here we've decided.
Well, not anymore. I think Judge Wilson enjoined enforcement of that law.
Yeah, here we can't get it because we've decided that this is not something that we abide by, the force feeding of geese.
Yeah, but you can fly to New York and get it.
Yeah. Okay. So the point is, and, you know, we don't eat whale, but in Japan, maybe they do eat whale.
They pay extra.
They pay extra, and they can eat some whale over there. But we've just decided that we don't like this. And I think this country has some things that we share with Mexico that we do like. And then some of the other stuff we don't like.
Well, part of the problem we've got with Mexico, I mean, the dirty little secret that nobody ever wants to talk about, you've got almost it's become a complete narco state. I mean,
right.
there are parts of Mexico that are not that much different than what's going on in Iraq. I mean, you know, right. with the armed insurgents in, you call it, you've got ISIS there. Well, you've got cartels to the south of us.
Yeah, well, I would argue, and I've said it so much in, I think in 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, but maybe it was another book. Look, if you study the United States and Mexico and you just do it from a Google satellite, whatever, it's a random arbitrary stripe in the desert along the coast of the Baja Peninsula. It's just a stripe. There's nothing in the groundwater there. There's no magic juice in the ground aquifers we have here. It's just a stripe in the desert. It didn't even exist 150 years ago.
Right.
So on one side of it, they have set up shop a certain way. And on the other side, our side, we've set up shop in a different way. And for whatever reasons, somebody's decided that people are trying to get across the stripe onto our side.
Right, because they like it better.
Right. Now, in terms of Trump and whomever, if in enough of whatever it is, either it's a culture or it can be a species, if you introduce a species and enough collect and enough set up, it will be business as usual.
Right.
So my plan would be to thin the amount of people that come over, and then who is over and is who here try to indoctrinate, learning the language,
well, that's,
being,
you know,
educated, and so on and so forth.
I'm only two generations removed from all four grandparents coming over. So
everybody,
virtually everybody you meet can trace their immigration to this country.
I said on my podcast a few weeks ago, my wife's, Lynette, both parents born in Italy, number one. So our kids aren't very far removed from Italy. But speaking of Italy, Mario Andretti called in and was talking to him about the Paul Newman documentary,
which was spectacular, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate that. I was talking about a bunch of stuff. And, you know, he said he came here from Italy at 15. And he speaks pretty well. I mean, he doesn't have much of an accent. And at 15, and I said, well, were you go-karting, motorsports, what were we doing in Italy before you came here? Because most of these guys who win in F1 and they win in Indy and they, whatever, sports cars, dirt track, he's done it all. They start off in carts or whatever, whatever have you.
Right.
And he said, oh, we're nothing. We had nothing. We didn't have any money. We didn't do anything. We came over here because of Franco something and Croatia and whatever it is. But we fled, basically, and we got here. And I said, you got here at 15. He said, yep. How did you become, and now the guy's built an empire.
Right.
He's built an empire.
He's a international brand.
I have been to his place in Indianapolis. It's 200 kajillion square feet of IndyCar prep and his grandson's semi-trucks pulling up everywhere. And he said, the first thing I wanted to do was learn the language. I had to learn the language. I gave myself some insane amount, like 4 months to learn the language kind of thing. And I thought, could you imagine if Mario Andretti did not learn the language? He just got himself sort of steeped in an Italian-American community. They spoke in their native tongue. He got a job over at the butcher shop. The butcher was Italian. They spoke in Italian. And just Italian folks came in and ordered cold cuts all the time. Like, where would Mario Andretti be today? More importantly, where would Michael Andretti, his kid, and Marco, his grandson.
Exactly.
Not running an indie team. That's for goddamn sure.
That's absolutely true. But that's the story of the American dream. I mean,
right. But we'll get back to, I'm curious about this sanctuary city and about how this works, because people can have whatever feelings they want about immigration, and they vary quite a bit. But I think if you polled most Americans and you say, this guy was deported back to Mexico five times and he had 7 felony arrests on his record, would you still like him to be walking around Fisherman's Wharf?
Well, I don't really understand. And I looked at his record, and I looked at the prosecutions. Every time, or at least the first three times he came back, the feds prosecuted him for illegal reentry. I mean, go down to San Diego Federal Court sometime. That's all they do. They process these things.
We need to take a quick break. I want to hear what you think about the family of the woman that was basically executed by this guy. And I don't even know the whole story.
Well, he's claiming now that it was an accident. And, by the way, that the gun was apparently a federal agent's gun that had been stolen.
I want to know if there's Bucco Bucks here or not. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Reasonable Doubt and Mark Garagos.
LegalZoom. It's a brand new world of challenges out there. If you need legal help, and you do. I mean, you got to overcome those challenges. Think about what's out there. You need LegalZoom. Wondering the best way to protect your family or thinking of starting a business? Don't let legal questions hold you back. Mark uses LegalZoom all the time. He uses it himself. He refers colleagues and folks to LegalZoom. They want his help, but he's got a nice billable hour going over there, people. You don't need that. You need LegalZoom. They can help you make some of the right decisions. And for over 19 years, protect your family. Start a will, living trust, start a business with a DBA, LLC, nonprofit as well. Protect yourself with LegalZoom. Right, Gary?
That's right. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of some important things you need to get done. That's LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom, where life meets legal.
All right. Back with Reasonable Doubt. Mark Garagos over there. Adam Carolla over here. 10E is the name of his restaurant. It's downtown. It's right by the fire station.
Yeah, right? It's right around the corner from the fire station, the other restaurant. We've got Engine Company 28, and this is 10E. It's Mediterranean tapas. So stop by there. Stop by Engine Company 28. I'll pour you a mangria at either place.
Love you, Mark Garagos. So back to this case. This guy's – and I don't know what's in it for Gavin Newsom or whomever – I think he was the mayor at the time, when the feds say, hey, we want this guy deported. And Gavin says, not on my watch. Obviously, he's pandering to the Hispanic vote. But do the Hispanic folks really want the felon roaming around?
No, I don't think so. And I don't understand. Look, I'm the first one to try. I try to stay away from doing the defense of immigration deportations. I've only done two in my career because it's just such a bizarre and Byzantine area of the law. But the problem is this is a weird dance between the feds and the cities. I mean, the feds turned this guy over to San Francisco so that they could prosecute him after he'd done his federal time. Mm-hmm. So they did that full well knowing that once he did his time, and it was for some Mickey Mouse case, it was a low-grade felony, he was never going to do more than 9 months or a year in the best-case scenario. They knew, because they've got a history, that San Francisco's not going to hold a detainer. They're not going to say, okay, he's done his time here. Now, here you go, feds. We're going to give him back. So why are they honoring – why are the feds, who are the ultimate Bigfoot, why are they giving him over to San Francisco? If San Francisco says – we're not going to honor your detainers, then why are the feds saying, okay, we're going to honor yours? Because that's right. What they did. They gave the feds – this guy was in federal prison and was handed to the city of San Francisco by the feds. That, to me, is part one of the craziness. Part two is San Francisco, and I think it was George Gascon who was the DA, said, well, there was no legal basis for us to hold him. Well, maybe, but once again, the feds know – that if they turn him over to San Francisco, once he's done his time, they're just going to turn him out. He's going to go straight out of their county jail. Why didn't they file another unlawful reentry, issue a warrant, and then they would have had to turn him back over to the feds?
Right.
So something – it's almost like everybody's just pointing their finger at everybody else. It makes little or no sense to me.
Why is it that – and – again, I'm confused. I'm just because of my lack of education and my being an atheist and everything like that. I'm sort of like, we have laws for immigration, and they work not just for Mexico, but they're the same for Canadians And we have borders, and some of it is safety, and some of it is commerce, and some of it is backyard fruit. But we have a border with other countries, like right. other countries have, like Mexico has, with their neighboring countries. And then they have some rules. And part of those rules are, we need to know who's coming in. We'd like to know what your business is. Are you a student? Do you have a work visa? And then we'd like to know when you're going back, or what it is you're doing here. And I'm not sure why that's become such a lightning rod. I know,
because it's always, I don't know. I think that there, it always becomes kind of a caricature, you know? I mean, yes. when you hear, that's what, we're going to build a wall and we're going to make Mexico pay for it. Really? That's going right. to happen? We're going to build, I mean, I guess it would create some jobs, but
right.
is Mexico going to write a check? What are they going to do? Sell more cocaine to the U.S. so that they can help pay for the wall they're going to build, so the guys who want to flee from the narco state don't come in? So, I mean, the whole thing is so...
Well, what? So if you're the family of the woman who was shot by the illegal, you know, five times deported or seven times felon arrest or whatever it was, who are you going after? And are there some deep pockets somewhere?
It's a very tough that's a very tough case, because what are you going to say? The city lawfully had a policy. The city officials were following the policy.
Oh,
the
seven feds, times deported and a five time something?
Five time reentry, or was it seven times convicted?
Either way. I mean, can you go?
I mean, you could.
Can you go right after Gavin Newsom?
You could. He's gonna claim immunities. And probably would you probably would not get anywhere, would be my prognostication.
If you,
for
like
that.
Just picked out this guy
yeah.
and went after,
but
that
could
guy.
You sue the city for failing to comply with federal law and get some headway there? You may be able to. You might be able to sue the city of San Francisco. You'd file your, you know, your 910 action, and then you'd file your lawsuit, and you'd say they didn't file federal, they follow federal law. The little kind of added bonus is there's a stolen gun that this guy's got, and it's a federal agent. And how did that gun get away from the federal agent? And why did the federal agent leave the gun in his car so that somebody could break into the car? And,
right.
Well, there's so many questions that are unanswered, but you've always got a tough time when you're suing the government.
It seems, you know, they tend to side with themselves.
Yeah. Well,
he's been deported five times and has seven felony convictions. That's our latest number. But the thing that's curious to me is that, you know, people say, look, most of these people are hardworking, family oriented, whatever, and we're going to penalize them for whatever, whatever. And my feeling is why, Mark, do we need to take everything, and why can't we deal with everything in a case-by-case basis? Which is like, they say like, all right, the death penalty. Well, they go, look, we can't have the death penalty. Well, why not? Well, the poor black guy gets pointed out by the old woman with the cataracts as being the guy who shot the clerk behind the counter at the 7-Eleven. She's 88 years old. Her father was in the Klan. Her grandfather drove the car from Dukes of Hazzard. And on her testimony, we're taking this 19-year-old black male, single mom, 17 brothers and sisters, and we're strapping him into an electric chair without proper representation, blah, blah, blah.
Right, with a lawyer who made $50.
Right. I get it. I get it. But on the other hand, then
we have
the
Boston Marathon bomber,
right,
and
right.
you say to yourself, you know what, if there's ever a case for it, and I
yeah, we have a security camera footage of this guy going into the dormitory where the nurses were sleeping and stabbing everyone with a machete, and then we have a retinal scan and DNA all over the place. So can we just go ahead and kill this guy? And the black guy can just go down and shoot some hoop over at the federal penitentiary?
The problem is it's just been the case-by-case basis would be great if the law wasn't always built on these grand pronouncements. You always have to have a grand pronouncement. So that's the problem. I mean, I bash my head against the wall saying that about things. Why is there some policy, for instance? Why is the DA's office say, before they change their policy, all three strikes cases, 25 years to life, even if it was a guy stealing pizza. I mean that's enough to make
right.
you crazy.
Well, back to our first episode, no taxiing in an airplane if the overhead container's doors open, but if there's nothing in it, then proceed.
Right.
But if we have surveillance footage of him killing the nuns, then we can go ahead and kill that guy.
There's, you know, this could be, as crazy as it sounds, a product of kind of this lowering the bar of the educational system in this country, dumbing it down that you've got to have rules and the rules have got to, you know, we're a nation of laws, not men. And so everybody wants a rule that applies to everybody, no matter what the situation is, even if that just sweeps up ridiculous situations on the outliers. And that's part of the problem.
You were talking about Trump at the top, and then we were talking about his comments about illegals and immigration and stuff, and then obviously this thing goes down with this young girl and her father. Was there more that you wanted to get into?
Yeah, I want to know about the losing the sponsors. What do you feel about that? Because you're a guy who deals with sponsors,
yes.
And here's a guy who's running for office, and now he's losing all of these sponsors, including NASCAR, which I can't quite figure out.
Well, I heard him interviewed. Sorry, and you know he's always very grandiose and
right.
pompous, and he's great. I mean, he's sort of it's like if he's you're almost like a higher intellect version of him, like a lot of energy. A lot of hand movement.
I do have a lot of hand movement.
Some grandiosity, but I think you probably have a better grasp on critical thinking. But he said, well, some of this stuff is just blown up because that losing NASCAR was he was doing an event. Well, in a very Trump-esque way, he said NASCAR was just going to have a benefit at one of my resorts, and they pulled out. Good. I keep the deposit, and
right,
we'll just
exactly.
sell the banquet room to somebody else. So we'll have a bar mitzvah there, and I'll double down
right,
on the
exactly,
Grand Trinon right. Ballroom at the Trump whatever. And then he said, and the same thing with the whatever, whoever.
Right. And I think ESPN or somebody was the other one.
That was a golf tournament. Right. We'll keep the deposit, and right. we'll sell it to an Asian businessman, and I'll double down, and I'll make more money off it. So that was his thing, which I was sort of – in a weird way, I like the – first off, I love anyone who gets on the offense. I really do.
Well,
like, I like it when people are being accused of things and people are wagging their fingers and, oh, no. And I hate the person that takes their styrofoam hat in hand and goes, you know, if I've offended anybody, when he's like, fuck you, I got your deposit.
Which is why I see – as much as politically I'm probably on the complete opposite spectrum of him, there's something about the attitude. It's the same reason why I always want to defend the underdog in a perverse way because he's certainly no underdog. But the idea that you don't have to always be on your heels and you don't always have to be kind of running backwards on this stuff, you take the offense. Best defense is a good offense.
I think that, you know, what he did was, as it pertains to immigration, pointed out a bunch of things that I think a lot of Americans think quietly but certainly don't say into microphones. And then he took it a step further by insulting,
right.
which was stupid. What you do is when you have a couple of points and, you know, and those points may have some validity to them, but then you end it with, and everyone in Mexico is a douchebag, then you've now erased your
right.
some
Nobody
valid
remembers.
Points.
Nobody remembers anything that happened before your whole thesis gets kind of thrown out.
Right. So you should start with everyone in Mexico is a douchebag right. and then make your valid points.
And then you can move
points.
From there. But,
right.
the problem is the irony of this is, and I think what freaks out Republicans is – that he's surging in the polls as a result of this.
Well, my feeling with Trump and my feeling with anybody running for anything now, I mean, especially Republican, would be this. You know, every 7.5 years, a movie comes out starring like Kevin Costner, where Joe Blow decides to run for wherever. And first speech is he gets up there, he starts reading off a piece of paper, and then he crumples it up and goes, listen.
Right. Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
I'm not a politician. I'm going to say some things that are going to piss off some people, but I'll tell you, it's going to be the truth. And I'm and then they go and the music starts swelling.
Right.
And everyone kind of goes, I like that guy because he's genuine, you know. And I don't think anyone wants to see Hillary Clinton in a pantsuit outfit reading off a teleprompter.
No. And I don't think anybody wants to see a coronation of Hillary Clinton, I think, right. is one of the reasons why now you see Democrats jumping in.
Well, we're at the point, you know, I try to look at things sort of globally, like reality TV barely existed 12 years ago, and now it's half of the programming, and YouTube and all this stuff. Like, you know, we want real. You see, when we started, it was Busby Berkeley and the Follies and Mammy and a bunch of makeup. And, you know, in movies, when you'd watch a movie from the 40s, it didn't even seem like a conversation. We're like, listen, your mug's getting in here. You understand? I'm 20 years ago. I'm going to tell you what. And we're going to do it my way. You understand? You see? My way or my way or the highway. You understand, boss? Okay. And it was like, it doesn't even seem like acting because it wasn't. It was
a caricature almost.
Right. And it was a form of acting that we understood was acting. And then at a certain point, here comes Marlon Brando or we're watching
acting.
Taxi Driver or something. And we're going into a whole new reality realm. Well, TV, which used to be, I mean, my God, when you watch these sitcoms from the 80s and stuff, it's like, oh, everyone's made up. You know, they come down in the morning and they're full makeup and hair.
Right.
Ooh, had a rough night last night. Like, really? You don't look like it.
You look glammed out more than I've ever seen
you. You're sitting with a stylist for 2 hours. But all right. But now we smash cut to Vice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We want gritty. We want real. We want the truth. We want all the zits and warts and back, you know, we want
right.
to see it.
We want Chris Christie.
Right. We want to see it, you know. We want reality TV. And if one of the politicians, especially one from a Republican camp who had a bunch of what I like to call F me money, which is F you money is good, but F me money where I can like I can throw away $30 million. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit. That's what I mean. I mean, they go. That's why people keep saying it's a joke. It's a joke. I think he's got no legs or this or that, or it's going to be like the last time around in 2012 where every week, you know, there was Herman Cain for a week. There was Michelle Bachmann for a week. I'm not so sure. I think when you've got F me money, that gives you the ability to withstand this kind of stuff.
Yes, they should. F me money sounds like the greatest personal injury attorney that ever born. Go see F me money.
Go see F me money. That's pretty good. And F Lee Bailey could be your spokesperson.
That's right.
For F me money.
He'll get you, and they may have the black guy in the wheelchair. $4 million.
Larry Parker. F me money. You know what? Maybe that should be the sponsor of Reasonable Doubt. Is F me money?
Let's get the law firm of F me money on board, Gary. So
and we'll have they can sponsor Pick a Plaintiff every week.
I would say this. I would say that my theory in life is if you're in the middle of Chinatown. And every single place is some dim sum place, and they're all trying to beat each other. Who makes the best pot stickers or whatever it is?
Dim sum or hard
dim sum, right. You open yourself a taco joint right in the middle of it, and I think you do gangbuster business. As long as the tacos are good, you go, I'm not going to try to beat these people at their game. I'm going totally off the reservation here.
It comes back to what we were saying before. Episode number one about you have to think a little bit outside the box.
And I think you're right. I think what Trump does is don't try to walk back a lot of this stuff and then join the rest of the dim sum places in Chinatown. Stand by your guns, get up there, say a bunch of offensive shit, and say to everyone, you know, first things first. It's like, you know, Mitt Romney gets busted saying, you know, well, you know, it's
47%.
None of us own it. First off, own it. Just go, listen, my toilet is gold and I shit into it every night. And by the way, there are nickels embedded in my shit. That's how much fucking money I have. And yes, my wife is hotter than yours. And I can't even pronounce her fucking name.
Right.
That's how hot she is. So that's number one. And yes, I took a corporate jet here today because
right.
I don't
because
fly
I don't
want
to go into TSA.
I don't give a fuck about the greenhouse. Now, listen to me. I'm going to treat this goddamn country like a business, and I'm going to put people to fucking work, and I'm going to put more than one chicken in every pot and two cars in every garage, and I'm getting this fucking place back. Now, if you want to go with the guys with the relationship of convenience who are going to read the teleprompter and promise they're going to do a lot for you and do shit for you, well, by all means, do it. The last guy we had 8 years of hope and change. I don't know how that's worked out for all of you folks out there. I don't know how much hope you have or how much change you have in your pocket. But either way, if you want to try something, I'm a guy who loves this country, and I just think we should be number one. And look, if you're offended by the statement of I want this country to be number one again, go fuck yourself.
Look at the history of presidential elections, too. Usually, especially after you've had 8 years of somebody, the guy who follows is usually almost a complete counterbalance or a counterweight. I mean,
right.
From George W. Bush to Barack Obama, I mean, right. You could not find a bigger counterweight. And, you know, the idea of this time from Barack Obama, who do you go to? Is Hillary Clinton that kind of a counterweight? I don't think so. And look,
I'm going to agree with you culturally because you started off promoting concerts, music back in the Perkins Palace days. I've always said, you know, we had this whole Leonard Skinner kind of beards down to here, holes in the jeans thing, and then that turns into disco.
Right.
And then
it's a perfect example.
Then disco turns into punk rock.
Right. And you've got 999 and Romeo Void and, you know, Rodney Bingenheimer.
Right. Then we go. So nothing could be a greater chasm from disco than to punk rock. And then we go from punk from a stylistic standpoint, you go from punk rock to a preppy. Penny loafers and Oxfords and
the Ralph Lauren look.
Right.
Exactly.
Double collars popped up. Then at a certain point, when we've heard enough of the glam rock of the Cinderellas and all the makeup and hair and the dude bands that look like chicks, here comes grunge.
Right.
Here comes Kurt Cobain, and he's wearing a flannel shirt, and he doesn't give a fuck.
Fuck, exactly. That,
so, yes, as a country, we love to swing. We don't want to slide back to the middle.
No,
the pendulum swings all the way
exactly.
The other side.
And it's just we tend to just completely flip-flop, and it's in these eight-year increments, and I think that goes for music. It goes culturally for virtually everything.
I agree, and a good note to go out on. By the way, Mark's book, Mistrial, available on Amazon as we speak. My book, Daddy Stop Talking, available as we speak as well. We'll do some live shows. You can go to adamcarolla.com, find out where the live shows are, Mangria, all that good stuff. You want to see Winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman, you can check that
out
on iTunes.
Great,
I'm
great
really glad
movie.
You liked that movie. Yeah, we put a lot into it. And, of course, Tenny, which is Mark's restaurant. I don't have the address in front of me.
811 West 7th Street, Mediterranean Tapas in the beautiful Fine Arts Building downtown.
So, and website, Garagos.com. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla from Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.